I mean, just the shopping and the ordering alone is just a ton of work, and just the sourcing of the menu, you know, to think about. I mean, just to come up with the concept of the menu and then build from it from there, and the different layers of, okay, we have to do this, and now how do I follow this beer with that beer and this food and that food and all these different things, because, you know, last thing I want you to do is just like, oh, I mean,
sure,
huge beers.
Oh, and, sure. And, are you kidding me?
You know, I mean, I could have just blown it out of the water, and you just feel sick, and that's just a disservice, you
right.
know. I mean, people do throw up at the French Laundry, you know, because they just overeat, you know, and so even to have the right portions.
I thought they threw up when the check came.
Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. It is LA Beer Week, so we're going to do something. I don't think I've ever done this on the show before, which is to focus solely on beer and beer pairings. So if you're a beer geek, you're going to love this show. If you're not a beer geek, this might get your feet wet a little bit. If nothing else, you'll be amazed at the prowess of the man, not the myth, but definitely the legend, Sean Z. Paxton, the homebrew chef. He's got a show on the Brewing Network, The Homebrew Chef. If you haven't checked that out, you should. TheBrewingNetwork.com. You've heard me talk about him before, but this is the first time I've actually been able to taste his food. So we're going to recap the night. I got a bunch of audio from that. Got an interview with the chef at the end of the whole thing. And I learned something. I don't do big beers well. Oof, I got wasted. I didn't even feel like it was that bad, but I'm doing the interview with Sean, and I'm slurring my words. It's embarrassing, but it's a good interview, so I've got to bone up and maybe not do big beers next time. One quick thing before I get started. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get a show together for Halloween this year. The way things are going, it's getting to be a bit tight. But I will be appearing on another podcast for a very special Halloween celebration. Tune into The Bob Show. The B-A-U-B show.com on Sunday, October 30th. I'll be appearing as a co-host along with Bob and Sherry, who, if you haven't heard the show before, she is funny as hell. Bob's funny too, but it's just amazing. They're a really good combination. Bob knows how much I love Halloween, and he's put together a very special spooktacular of his own. And I'll be bringing some Halloween-themed beers with me and some food to go with it. So clear your slate on Sunday, October 30th. Tune in live. I don't know all that he has planned, but so far, it sounds like a really fun show to be a part of. He's already announced that Neve Campbell from the Scream movie franchise will be a guest on the show. So we'll be interviewing her. I love her in those movies. TheBAUBShow.com. Or just click a link on My Life as a Foodie. I'll link to you there. I don't do a lot of beer pairing dinners. And there's a reason I don't do that. For the most part, once you've been to one really good beer pairing dinner, you more than likely have been to all of them. And I was saving myself for an opportunity to stand at the mountaintop, and this event was that mountaintop. The very first beer dinner I ever went to, up to this point, was the best one I'd ever gone to. It never got better than that. And that was back in, I think, 96 or 97. It was a Belgian beer dinner, and the food was French, and it was great, and the beers were all imported French and Belgian beers, and it was a good time. The food was excellent, but ever since then, they gradually got worse, and what I started to see was this trend of mediocre chefs trying to capitalize on the fact that craft beer is popular and that beer dinners are starting to you know, take shape like wine dinners did. Because wine pairing dinners have always been the norm. Beer pairing dinners are rather new for a lot of people. So one day I'm talking to Spoon from Should I Drink That? He tells me he was at this beer dinner in Pennsylvania. And it was very typical of what you'll see. Just really, the beer was okay, but the food was mediocre. It was like chicken soft taco. He sent me a picture and it looked like, who the hell put that together? I mean, that looked like something you'd make at home. It was a flour tortilla that was just kind of limp. It wasn't cooked. It was like a boiled piece of chicken breast with some coleslaw across the top. And it looked lame. It wasn't dressed. It didn't look good. And what are you pairing with that? You know, chicken wings and poppers and pizza, crap like that. No. I mean, it's bad. It's basically beer dinners now are a dime a dozen. And there are some that are really good, but those are few and far between. So it's gotten really bad, and you've got to be very careful. It got to the point for me where I said, look, you know what? Let's just do our own. We'll get some really good beers, invite some people over, and I'll make some food. I am not a Chef Paxton. I don't cook like him. I'm not of that level, not even close. But I did my best to pair food that I like using ingredients that I can work with, much higher quality than you'll see in most places. I mean, they're serving 100 people, 150 people. They've got to keep the cost down. I don't have to do that when I've got 8 people over. I can spend, you know, whatever it's going to take. But because LA should be, but really isn't, a hot pocket of craft beer, Firestone Walker thought it would be a good idea to kick off LA Beer Week in style. Now, for those of you who don't know, Firestone Walker Brewing Company is a 3-time World Beer Cup champion. So they've got quite the storied history. Firestone Walker has produced a lot of beer over the years. And what they decided to do was create a rare beer blend into key components with the help of Chef Paxton. Their 15th anniversary ale is a blend of 8 different barrel-aged beers that they've made. And they've spent about 6 years crafting this blend with some local Paso Robles winemakers that worked with the brewmaster, Matt Brynaldson. So they asked Chef Paxton to add his style and his knowledge of beer to each single dish, and then incorporate all 8 beers that make up their 15th anniversary ale paired with each course. So Sean completely deconstructed the flavors in each one of these beers and then prepared small tapas-style dishes to go with each beer. The event was held at the Avalon Theater on October 12th, and it was hosted by Chef Paxton, David Walker, who's co-owner of Firestone Walker, and Brewmaster Matt, who is about as cerebral as it gets when it comes to beer. I mean, this guy gets into it. And before I go any further, I'll do a little history on Firestone Walker. They started in 1996, and they were renting this facility from the Firestone Vineyard Estate in Santa Barbara County. In 2001, Adam Firestone and David Walker, the owners, purchased the St. Louis Obispo Brewing Company, located in Paso Robles. They ferment all of their beers, to my knowledge, in their own Firestone Union oak barrel brewing system. It incorporates all these 65-gallon medium and heavily toasted American oak barrels. So all their beer has this really rich taste, and it's different than a lot of the beers that you'll taste. Unique, artisan, crafty, and really what separates the men from the boys. I mean, there are a lot of pretenders out there, as you've seen them, and these boys are not playing around. I want to rewind a little here, play about 5 minutes of audio from Firestone Walker. This came off their website. This is kind of they were kind of, you know, giving you a little preface of what's going on here. This will kind of give you a little more of an insight into what's going on and how Brewmaster Matt approached the whole thing.
So I'm Jamie Smith, Vice President of Marketing for Firestone Walker Brewing Company, here with Brewmaster Matt Brynaldson. We're going to talk a little bit about Deconstructed LA, which is an event launching LA Beer Week this year on October 12th at the Avalon Theater in Hollywood. And it's basically going to be a really cool breakdown of our anniversary beer paired with foods, and that'll be done by Sean Paxton, the homebrew chef. This is kind of a unique event in that it's really taking a beer that is rather complex. You know, it's built up of all these beers, making a blend, and then taking it apart, almost like you put it together, and then having Sean come in and really deconstruct that. I don't know if you have any ideas. What do you expect from Sean? You know, we've done some things with him in the past. What are your thoughts about working with him on this? And
well, Sean's really talented, and I say it. I think he's about as good as it gets in beer and food pairing today. And he certainly spends a lot of time thinking about it. I mean, he's very innovative. He's kind of blown our minds every time we've done an event with him. And I think this one's perfectly tailored to his talents. He's actually sat our anniversary blending sessions before. And he's even brewed with us. He brewed one of the components years ago, which was Saucer Full of Secrets. So Sean understands the brewery very well. You know, he and I are very good friends. So we are of like mind, and we think very similarly when it comes to flavor. You know, he's seen the winemakers in action. So he knows as much about it, and I think he probably has all these ideas in his mind ahead of time. Usually the trick is holding Sean back.
Right, reining him in a bit, absolutely.
I think it's going to go really well. I think it's going to be an epic event, and I'm really excited for it. And, you know, I've said it before, but all the hard work for the brewers is done. We made these beers months and months ago. The winemakers came in, took care of the blending, so we get to sit back and enjoy. Sean's the one who's going to do the work that night.
Matt, I guess one of the major questions that we're going to have is what beers are going to be featured at Deconstructed, and of course that will tell us also what beers are making up 15. The first is Velvet Merkin here. So tell us a bit about that, what it contributed to 15, why you think it was included, what it adds, and a little bit of the history behind it.
This beer is the lowest alcohol beer we have in the barrel program, and it more was born out of the fact that, you know, we had changed the name from Merlin to Merkin. I kind of wanted to keep that name alive. We had the barrel age program, and stouts marry so well with oak, especially the bourbon barrels. So I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, maybe, was the first time we offered this up to the winemakers, and they immediately were on it. It's so different from the rest of the beers because it's a smaller beer. It really brings a lot of barrel character forward. I mean, it's actually awesome as a barrel aged beer. And yeah, the winemakers love it. They always try to pretty much add as much of it to the blend as they possibly can, so we somewhat limit the number of barrels we have them to play with.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And where did the name come from, Velvet Merkin?
I mean, this is a recipe that I've been playing around with since I was a home brewer. When we first started making it in Firestone, we really didn't have a home for it. It was just more for us to drink, and so we give it these interesting names. So we have a code word in-house that eventually leaked out. And then when we decided to release it in bottle, we changed the name to Merlin.
So this one was basically a kind of it was a homebrew recipe, though, is where it originated.
Yeah, it's a really straight-ahead English-style oatmeal stout. The basic frame of this recipe came right out of Roger Prost's, one of his books on ale brewing in the UK. It uses all U.S. Fuggle hops to try to capture a little bit of an element of American hop in it. But for the most part, it's a straight-ahead English style oatmeal stout.
Very cool. The other beer then that we're going to talk about this week, and basically we'll release two each week up until the event, but to kind of make it kind of fun, is Goodfoot. So I don't know that a lot of people even heard of that beer before. Where did the name come from? What kind of style is that? Can you tell us a little bit about that beer?
Yeah, that beer was really born out of kind of the Bravo barley wine side of our barrel age program. Bravo was the first barley wine we brewed. We purposefully made it very lean and hot when it came out of stainless so that it could just mellow out in the barrels. I'm really sensitive to having overly sweet beers, especially in barrel age program. So we started out making real hot beers, and we realized later on down the line that we needed a few bigger, beefier beers and a few more hop-driven beers to balance out the portfolio and give the winemakers more to play with. And so Goodfoot was basically the hoppy version. It was triple-hopped barley wine all on the front end to give it a lot of bitterness that would hopefully carry through the aging and give the winemakers kind of that bitter chocolate element, more astringent element to blend down some of the sweetness of the other beers. And, you know, I'm a James Brown fan, so the name came from that.
That's awesome. How do you think, I guess one of the last questions I had was regarding 15. How do you think the winemakers approach it differently than, let's say, brewers who would be blending a beer?
Yeah, I mean, we've learned a lot from the winemakers in the blending program. You know, they're all about synergy, they're all about round edges, they're all about subdued characteristics. You know, craft brewers, it's still a young first generation kind of endeavor, and we tend to be a little wilder. We tend to like big peaks and exclamation points and bitterness and hop character. And winemakers, I don't want to say it's a more mature approach, but I think that there's an element of winemaking about, you know, really making everything melding together. And they always come up with a blend that is really almost the opposite of what most of the brewers would come up with. So I think that really is what makes this project unique. Yeah.
So I'm at the event with my beer posse, which includes Don.
I looked at it, I go, okay, look, we're going to have like individuals, and then we go to the blended at the end.
Don's brother Bill.
Did you get that before I did?
No.
You didn't either.
And Bob.
Bob, did you get it?
I had no freaking idea.
See?
Asshole.
Huh. I guess you can tell I've had a few at that point. That's embarrassing. We're handed a signature tasting glass, and we're directed into a tap room where they're pouring Firestone Walker's Double Barrel Ale, served from a Firkin and Pale 31. Both very good beers in their own right, an American Pale Ale and a heavily malted English-style ale. Fantastic beers, a perfect complement to what Sean set out as what he called munchies before the dinner start. And when I say munchies, I mean there's an overachiever in the room here, okay? Saffron white truffle oil-coated organic popcorn cooked in duck fat and dusted in hop salt. Get the f*** out of here. That was about as decadent as popcorn gets. There were toasted cashews with malt, Moroccan spices, and double barrel ale glaze, always incorporating what you're drinking with what you're eating. That's Sean's signature style, because it's about the beer. It's about the food, but it's about the beer. And I knew we were in trouble. If these were the munchies, this is going to get really deep. Okay, so I've got a lot of audio here. Here's David Walker introducing Brewmaster Matt and a little bit of Matt's introduction to the whole evening and why Firestone Walker decided to do this in Los Angeles. See, Los Angeles, for those of you who don't live around here, it's a creative mecca. I mean, I don't understand why something as creative as craft beer isn't bigger here. Because I'm telling you something, if LA doesn't catch on soon, Orange County, we're ready. The beer revolution is already in full swing. We'll take it if you don't want it. I mean, Los Angeles has got, when it talks about creativity, we have ad agencies, photographers, artists, songwriters. We make movies here. We make music here. TV shows, podcasts, radio shows. It's happening in Los Angeles. Don't kid yourself. So craft beer should be the next big thing. And if it's not, Orange County will take it. Again, if you're not someone who geeks out on beer, stick with it, because the food will be coming soon.
In addition to confound your palate, we basically managed to persuade Sean, the speedo-wearing, exotic food-bearing Madison Badger Paxton, to come here and basically try and pair food with these beers. And, you know, I can't think of anyone better to ferment our souls with food. So, He'll be here to sort of guide us through that. All right. The upside with tonight is complicated. The downside with tonight is complicated. We've got 8 different beers and 8 wild tapas dishes to match it. So there's going to be servers funneling in and out. So keep your eye out for servers. Try and stay coordinated with your beers. You're going to drink a lot of big beer tonight. So buckle up, it's going to be a long night. If you showed up here for a belly full of bubbles and a revolutionary speech, you're not going to get it. This is the wrong venue. This is a serious beer evening, and these two gents, Matt Brunson and Sean Paxton, are going to lead us. So, with further ado, let me introduce you to the reigning 2-time champion Mid-South Brewer of the World, Matt Brunson, to the top of the first beer.
Well, welcome. Thank you for coming. And this is really cool. I was thinking about it on the way down that, you know, when I first started with Firestone 11 years ago now, dating myself, we talked about LA a lot. We talked about how we wish this was our home turf, how this was the place the beer revolution should be happening. But there's all these interesting people who live here. There's all these creative people who live here. There's all this exciting stuff. All the world watches LA. Why isn't LA drinking more craft beer? And now you pay attention, and it's happened. It's taken root. It took a little while maybe to see it longer than other areas like Portland and San Francisco and other areas, but it's really exciting, and there's an energy not only in this room, but for LA Craft Beer Week. It's really exciting. And so my first toast is to LA Beer Week and to all of you who a good fight and got craft beer rolling in LA.
So here's Sean introducing the first course, Duck Tagine. It's duck breast coated in Belgian candy sugar, coriander and ginger, It was cooked sous vide. You know, sous vide is basically cooked in a bag in a water bath over a long period of time. It's topped with a prune, pomegranate, and sticky monkey sauce over black beluga lentils simmered in double jack and carrot juice. This was paired with Firestone Walker Sticky Monkey.
To me, what's a trip is that these beers are so food-friendly, and this is where, to me, it's really fun for me to kind of bring you guys on this journey of deconstruction. You know, the whole idea for me from, you know, eight different beers blended together to create one beer is very unique. I've never tasted that before, especially when you start to look at the gravity of each of these beers, the flavor profiles. I mean, they're all really radical. So the food that I've designed for you guys tonight is tapas in style, and it's all meant to be paired with certain flavors, and I think you'll kind of get a lot of what's going on as far as at the end of the events, you'll be able to taste the first release of 15, and the whole idea is that this journey that we'll be taking and kind of destination points with each beer, you'll really get a greater sense of what went into 15, hopefully at the very end of the evening. So you guys have already kind of had some little noshing since we are in Hollywood, that we had to have some popcorn. You know, I think popcorn is underrated, especially when you cook it in duck fat. It gets a little bit better. We also put in some white truffle oil and some saffron, and then actually I made some hop salt. And so the salt is actually layered with holy hops for about a six-week process to get all that great flavor just into the salt. So I don't think anything like that. But that, and then you have the Marrakesh kind of seasoned cashews just to kind of help cleanse the palate, kind of get those wonderful flavors in there. We actually put a little bit of malt powder as well as some DBA in there to get that nice little flavor and pair with the DBA and the firkin. We also had some duck chicharrones, which I'm a huge fan of duck, and when you have extra duck skin, why not make duck chicharrones? So we had those with a little za'atar seasoning, and then we also had just some nice dates that I think, again, with this DBA would be really nice. The next course that's going to be coming out here real quick, we took Liberty duck breasts. These are the same duck breasts that the French Laundry and Japanese use. I live up in Sonoma, so I brought a lot of my Sonoma treats down with me. This duck was rubbed down with the Belgian sugar. The sugar is very similar to the same sugar that Matt used in the beer that we're pairing with. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then I took some ginger and some freshly toasted and ground coriander, a little bit of honey powder, a little bit of maple powder, and basically a little orange peel. Vacuum sealed these, cooked them sous vide. We seared them off to a nice crispy skin, and then just to play up the pairing, we have some black beluga caviar, or lentils that look like caviar, and we cooked that in double jack with carrot juice to balance out that sweetness, because it is a rather hoppy double IPA. But that citrus note really comes forth, and here it comes right now. We have a really nice sauce to go with this. We took prunes, pomegranate molasses, pomegranate juice, and also Sticky Monkey, which is the beer that we're pairing with today, which has a lot of the... Go ahead. And so the idea is that, you know, there's all these great flavors. The duck's rather rich, and there's a lot of earthiness with the prunes and all the flavors of that Sticky Monkey, which I'll have Matt talk about here in 1 second. And we really wanted to showcase that pairing. So without further ado, don't worry about trying to chase down the server. They're going to find you. And I hope you guys enjoy your evening.
Now, after a while, David Walker comes by our table and starts to talk to us about the beer and what they've been up to. I didn't expect him to start talking to us, so I didn't grab the recorder or stick it in his face. So the recorder's just on the table, and it acts more like a fly on the wall. So this guy's very cool, very good approach to his craft. And you can tell these people love beer, man. They really respect it. And I tell you, you've got to respect beer, unlike me at the end of the night.
Be interesting. Duck fat popcorn. Should can't beat that, right?
Fantastic. John, nice to meet you.
How'd you guys end up here?
Sure.
Friend of Sean's.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You live locally?
Yeah,
we do.
South. Yeah, we're south of 50 miles.
Yeah, we've done some a few things together.
This is going to be an interesting one because
actually sort of running the food around.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Should be good.
This is the first time a microbrewery has ever blended beers.
You know, they I mean, it's not the first time, I'm sure they have, but no one really, because our roots come out of the wine business.
Sure.
Winemakers blend wine all the time.
Which is what makes this unique for a beer.
Right, and so, which is one of the reasons we got the winemakers involved.
It's because
they understand blending. Yeah. Brewers don't want to have any, you know, brewers are brewing a beer with a destination. Right. Right from the word go, the concept of being surprised by the destination just doesn't gel with
too big of a risk, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, in the case of these big beers, the anniversary beer is just a complete blend. So.
Interesting.
You've tasted this beer a bunch of times? Huh?
I've only tasted it a couple of times. It's really only been we only blended it 3-4 weeks ago, and it's only been really available. I wanted to see it settle. So. But the beers that make up the blend, that's the interesting thing. This one here, the Sticky Monkey. Some of these beers just might not be you might not agree with
it. Your cup of
on
tea.
Their own, yeah. But in most cases, they're pretty well balanced.
Oh, it's just pretty close, huh?
Oh, I'm just checking.
Enjoy the white truffle popcorn.
What is this again?
This is a duck on top of lentils.
Oh, wow, okay.
Everything has it's infused with beer.
Okay, great.
It's yummy. You actually have the menu on the table.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Of course. You guys got everything? Enjoy it. I'll be back with you.
Now, did I forget to grab a fork?
So this duck all at once.
Yeah,
I was going to say, how do you, do you just put the whole thing in your mouth?
Yeah, it's like sushi, baby. One bite.
You get the duck and the pomegranate. There's pomegranate on there. You know what it says?
The pomegranate. Right here.
And my mouth is full. What do you think of this?
No, this is awesome.
Delicious. What are we pairing this with? Is this the
Sticky Monkey?
Sticky Monkey?
Yeah, Sticky Monkey. And the monkey is sticky.
Is it sticky?
Very malty on the back.
And what are these? Are lentils?
Yeah, what are these?
With pomegranate.
Yeah, it's like a black lentil, pomegranate.
Prune, pomegranate, sticky monkey sauce. Black beluga lentils.
The whole fucking thing is sticky.
This is black beluga lentils.
Oh, I see. So the lentils represent beluga caviar.
Delicious.
I think this is a dish Katrina would love.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And a beer she would pass on.
It's big.
It's big.
It's almost like Bob says, like this is almost like having whiskey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, Sam Adams Utopias is like that.
Yeah.
Like you're drinking cognac or something.
They're pouring that blue, this is good. It's very good. Nice sipping.
Oh, it's great.
Like, you started out with the Pale 31, right?
I did.
What did you think of that?
I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I liked it. The one I had that I didn't like as much as the
Yeah. No, Sticky Monkey. This is
good. If you're expecting a beer to completely kick your ass, it ain't going to do it.
Yeah, high gravity.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yep, that one you have to respect.
The duck was delicious. It was cooked perfectly, pink in the middle like it should be, sticky prune and the semi-sweet pomegranate seeds. You know, they're kind of tart, and they're in season, by the way, which I thought was a good touch. We just started getting them. I mean, we've had them for a while, but now they're really in season. So sticky prune, which is really sweet, and then some tart pomegranate seeds. Oh, man. Really worked well together. The lentils looked exactly like beluga caviar, which I thought to myself, these would be great. This should be like a vegan's wet dream because they could pretend that they were like normal people eating caviar like everybody else. I don't know where he found these. I don't know how he did it, but it was smart. And Sticky Monkey, great name for that beer because it's exactly that, sticky. It's a 12% English barley wine, smelled like oak and molasses, tasted every bit of the 12%, but didn't have a burn. You know what? Beers that are that high sometimes have a burn that you come to expect, which makes it tolerable. you know, for people who aren't used to barley wines. You know, if it's not burning, it's very easy to drink. Very good balance, a really good first choice to start the evening with. But there were seven more on the way, and I had no idea how hardcore this was going to get. And listen, I'm going to list the ABVs of these beers because you got to understand, these aren't just normal beers. These are really, really amazing, the depth and the amount of malt and work that goes into these things. This isn't like your grandmother's beer or your grandfather's beer. Did your grandmother drink beer? If she did, this wasn't hers. So Sean's going to introduce the second course, which is cold Union Barrel smoked sea scallops served on a roasted beet fennel ginger-infused Israeli couscous with a double barrel ale medjool date, fennel pollen, and carbonated orange. This he accompanied by Firestone Walker's double barrel ale.
So our next course is going to come out here in just a second. But what's really fun when you start to look at flavors and like the first course, you know, the succulent, the beer, the prunes, the pomegranate, how that worked also with the Belgian sugar that was in Sticky Monkey. I mean, to me, this is just kind of like how this whole evening is going to go. So I spent way too much time thinking about this menu, but the next course is really fun because I've done variations of this many times. I love scallops. I think they're completely underappreciated. What we're doing with these is we actually took, Matt talked a lot about the barrel earlier, and they actually put one aside for me, and actually I took it apart and shaved it into little shavings and cold smoked scallops. We smoked this about 3-7 times. Really kind of fun, and then we cook these in sous vide in a little bit of beer and also a little bit of butter, and we put this on top of an Israeli couscous that's infused with roasted white beet, fennel, as well as a little bit of ginger. And then just to play up these different flavors of Morocco, we put in some medjool dates that are mixed in with some orange juice, some fennel pollen, some fennel tops, and then we put in a little bit of cinnamon. And then on top, there's these really cool new limes that you might start seeing. I just saw these and found these. They're called finger limes. They're really about yay big, and they look like a little pea pod. But inside, it's like these little caviar-like segments, really trippy. And I actually carbonated that in that was in Union Jack. And so you get this nice kind of refreshing pop. This is a cold dish. I thought this would work really well with the double barrel, which again with that oakiness and everything else and all those different flavors, and I love the idea of the date with that. So I hope you guys enjoy.
This led early on as my favorite dish of the night. I mean, until it was outdone later, of course. He took the barrels that the beer was fermented in, shaved the wood off, and then cold smoked the scallop with it. Who thinks like this? I mean, Thomas Keller comes to mind, to be honest. And I think he'd love that I made that comparison, because it's true. Thomas Keller is one of these guys that thinks, you know, I don't care how long it's going to take me to shave this garlic or to shave this ice sculpture. If it's going to make an impression or an impact on the diner or the person who's, you know, coming, who's coming for my food, I'm going to do it. It takes somebody with a lot of care and love for the craft. He made a cooked scallop taste like a raw scallop. Raw scallops, if you've never had it, raw scallops are delicious. If you can get one super fresh, it's a home run. You don't have to put anything on it. A little salt maybe, or if you want a dipping sauce, or if you want to have it like sushi or sashimi, put a little wasabi or something. It's brilliant. This was tender, delicious. And Sean's right, scallops are overlooked and they're underappreciated. And he nailed this dish. As for the double barrel ale, I'll say what I say about any beer that has double in the name. If you're drinking something with double in the name, you're in trouble. 10% American strong ale. Again, like the previous beer, strong, no burn. Tastes like sugar and oak, lots of malt. Not sticky like Sticky Monkey, but it does have legs. So far, this whole thing is heaven. And I'm sorry if we can't manage to shut the hell up, but the servers keep walking by us with all this food, and the aroma is filling the room. Everyone's going crazy. So it's hard to concentrate on Paxton and the food at the same time. We're trying to balance, you know. But the servers, they were great, by the way. But they couldn't get it to our tables fast enough because we just wanted to eat it the minute we saw it, the minute we smelled it. Sean's third course was lamb tenderloin with dried apricots, lavender honey, shallots, and El Dorado sauce, El Dorado being the beer that we're having with the dish. Now, I think you're starting to see the progression and how Sean works here. And this was over a bourbon barrel tea cooked butternut squash puree that was infused with cinnamon and double-double barrel ale and honey powder. Insane in the membrane. These are one-bite dishes, okay? Sometimes you get a fork. Sometimes you don't get a fork. No knives. It's either in your mouth with a fork or on its own. One bite and you're done. And he didn't scrimp with the servings. Every bite tastes like a full entree. The lamb, American, just like it should be. Superb lamb. The butternut squash puree was a perfect complement. Wasn't overdone. The cinnamon was only an accent, not a major flavor component. The dish had a lot of balance. And it's so easy to lose balance when you're doing a dish like this. You think he's showing off here, but he's not. Every component has a purpose. There's a reason why it's there. And the El Dorado sauce played with the flavors right up until you actually drank the beer. El Dorado was another barley wine. This one was about 12%. And again, I'm sorry if I keep knocking out the 12% the percentages here, but you got to understand how strong these beers were and why it worked with the food. This beer, the El Dorado, was rare. You're not going to find this anywhere else. To me, it shared a lot of the same flavors and the characteristics of Sticky Monkey. And looking back, the fact that they gave us Sticky Monkey to begin with, now I've got, you know, something to kind of compare everything to. It becomes the benchmark. But this one wasn't as thick on your palate. These beers, they're all perfect for flavors like this. And I asked Sean later in the interview, at what point, and this is kind of important because I think it is an important thing to think about. At what point did he decide in making the menu, I've got to go really big? And he says, well, it's not about going big. And I said, well, yeah, I got to disagree with that. These beers are tall orders. You got to wear your big boy pants to drink beers like this. The food that you make has to stand up to the beer. 12%, some wine is 12%. 14%, that's wine, okay? So now we're talking about bolder flavors. And food that has to stand up to bolder flavors. If you think of it that way, it makes more sense, right? The lamb stood up to this beer just barely. It worked out. But it's like one of those things that you could see where you could literally go bigger if you wanted to. But like Sean said, he has to show restraint. And you got to respect that. I mean, it would be way too easy for him to just blow you up with big food, big flavors. But he says, you know, it's not about that. It'd be a disservice to the event. It'd be a disservice to the beer. And he's right. Okay, so here's Sean describing the fourth course, which ended up being the best bite of the night, not only for me, but for Don, too. Marguez sausage pastries. It was phyllo dough layered with za'atar-wrapped homemade Marguez spice lamb sausage that he made himself with Union Jack, house-made goat milk ricotta. He made his own ricotta with malt vinegar, orange zest, and roasted Spanish piquillo pepper. The sausage pastry was paired with Firestone Walker's Double Jack, and that was had to be the best pairing of any food and beer of the night.
We did some real fun stuff with this next one. Wanted to do something a little different. We did a Marguez sausage, so Sonoma lamb that was browned with a little bit of pork fat. Mix that in with some smoked paprika, some cinnamon, cumin, coriander, ginger. What else is in there? Nutmeg, mace, as well as some orange peel. Also made, I took some goat's milk and actually added in some malt vinegar and made homemade ricotta with it. And then we put in some roasted paquito peppers and mixed that into a phyllo triangle that we layered with a za'atar. And to pair this with, we actually, and in the sausage too, we used some double jack. And then to pair it with is double jack. So enjoy.
So listen now as we go apeshit over this after it comes to our table. And listen as it takes about 30 seconds after it's in our mouths to get better and better and better. It's something that I'd see Afaf making. Very Middle Eastern, Syria, Iraq, along those lines. Beautifully crafted dish. Oh, and the server flirts with Bob, which should have resulted in a big tip, but Bob's a cheap bastard.
Bring up the masbuda.
What is that? What kind of accent is that? That was horrible.
Caveman. Is that an accent?
That was...
Yeah.
Geico caveman?
Yeah.
Me, caveman.
Me. Me, caveman. You.
Yay!
Hey, she
is. Look at you.
Are you new guy?
Yeah.
Are you new guy?
Yeah. Just now.
But it's okay. If your feet load out, I would grab a napkin first because it's so warm. And then put it on the napkin.
Perfect.
You don't grab it.
Yes. So good.
I'm gonna get biceps of steel.
Yes, you are.
Like,
you didn't have them already.
They're like huge. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you.
There you go.
Thanks.
Good.
I'm Bob. She didn't remember me.
Yes, she did. She's flirting with you. Hate the salute.
Aha.
Salute.
Salute. Chin chin. Chin chin. No, this is double jack. Double jack.
Yeah, it's good. Oh,
yeah, that's good. Marguerite sausage pastry. And phyllo dough. Oh, yeah, dude.
So many layers going on. That's amazing.
Well, that's great.
Oh, wow. It's like if you just kind of let it sit there, each layer kind of comes through and get the taste of all the spices.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Wow.
Smells awesome.
Oh, yeah. The taste is amazing.
You know, this is more of a Syrian dish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is something a Fof would make.
Wow. Syrian.
Junior eater.
That is good.
Middle Eastern a Fof. Syria or Iraq or something like that. That's something you eat there. That is really, really, really good.
Normally it would come with like a yogurt sauce or something, right?
It's really good with the beer.
That might
really
be
good with the beer.
That might be his best dish so far.
So far, yeah. That's fantastic.
That phyllo dough is just disappearing.
Wow. It's just a vessel.
Yeah. Oh, fuck off, dude. I saw that sitting there thinking myself, like, oh, that's going to be like, all right. Mini appetizer.
No, that's a home run, man.
No, that was a motherfucker.
Wow.
Wow.
Sean's fifth course, which he described simply as cheese and nuts, was a Moroccan almond cookie that was topped with crumbled Point Reyes blue cheese, which is my personal favorite, and a double barrel ale wort honey sprinkled with lemon thyme. It tasted like an Italian pastry, I swear. And I think that makes a lot of sense, too, considering that Italians, Sicilians, we've got a lot of those influences in our food, and those flavors seem to work alongside those dishes. So he served this one with Firestone Walker's Bravo. So here's Sean describing the dish, which merged us into the dessert part of the evening, and where I really started to truly feel the effects of the beer, the food, and everything just started to kind of come together. So as the servers walk by, on each serving tray are either branches or thick wood shavings that have been lit on fire to act like incense. The minute they bring the food in the room, it filled the entire room with this sweet smoke, and you just wanted to eat it. And Bob was joking, but he had a really funny line. He said it smelled like a Buddhist funeral. And it was funny because it was true. It kind of hit the nail on the head. It smelled otherworldly, ethereal. And once again, it displayed Sean's intelligence in making the right choices to pair with a special beer.
This is kind of a transition into dessert. I wanted to play up kind of the room behind me, which is kind of a French-style idea. And kind of start playing up that Moroccan into French. We have a nice cheese and nuts. Hmm. So we actually made a fun Moroccan style cookie with almond paste or almond flour, Union Jack instead of orange blossom water. And then we layered in some duck eggs and powdered sugar. And so you get this nice kind of crisp on the outside but slightly soft on the inside cookie, but it's almost like a cracker. With good friends of mine up Tamales Bay is Point Reyes blue cheese, which
yeah.
I think is awesome, awesome cheese. They raise their cows. They're very particular about what they're fed, how they're treated, and their cheese is just phenomenal. And the thing about that with,
a nice big beer like Bravo. I thought it would work real well.
Bravo.
We actually took double barrel Jack or sorry, DBA
Wort.
Hey, you're gonna take pictures of that, bro.
Down to make a honey. I actually added in some of the barrel
Another
shavings
one.
As well. And we drizzled that over the top of the Point Reyes Blue, and then a little bit of lemon and a little bit of thyme. And I think this will be just that bite that just senses it up. I mean, I know each course kind of gets progressively crazier. Wait till you get to the end. I mean, I went all, you know, full bore at that point. So,
sweet.
You know, since Matt keeps making all these great beers, I'm trying to think about how to pair. And I thought this was a real fun pairing, too, because just of the depth of this Ooh. Great beer called Bravo.
I was just looking at the
order. Bravo!
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 We were just talking about what an incredible time in history it is to be a beer drinker, and what a wonderful time in history it is to be a brewer. And so I'd like to propose a toast to this time and place in history for craft beer. So cheers to that.
Cheers! I'm waiting for the beer.
Now, Bravo was aptly named. It was an Imperial Brown Ale at 13.5%. You know that nuttiness you expect from a brown ale? Crushed by dark brown sugar flavor. Serious, just deep. It was a beer you had no choice but to respect this thing. It was perfectly matched with what Sean made. He continued the desserts with a velvet merkin chocolate cake that had, you know, the beer in it. Cubes of moist chocolate cake infused with velvet merkin, skewered on pipettes, filled with sticky monkey caramel sauce and coated in a dark chocolate and malted Pop Rocks with pistachio powder. I've had a lot of experience with pipettes. You remember, this is one of the cool kid tricks we saw at the bazaar a couple years ago. I started adopting this. I bought some pipettes, or actually Joe bought them for me. And I use them for things like Caprese on a stick, and I'll put pesto in it, so it's like a pesto shooter. Or I'll fill the pipette with cocktail sauce, and I'll drive the pipette through a cooked shrimp, so you've got a cocktail shooter. So you just squirt the cocktail sauce in your mouth. But this was the first time I'd seen it used as a vessel for a dessert, a caramel sauce that you put over the cake. I actually shot it right in my mouth. If you don't know by now that this is a beer dinner unlike any other, then you're living on another planet. Sean paired this dish with Firestone Walker's bourbon barrel-aged velvet merkin that was served on nitro, which nitro makes everything smoother. It was around this time that you start to feel, maybe I should cry uncle, you know, but you can't, you're with your friends. A bourbon barrel-aged oatmeal stout on nitro was just delicious. And if there's anything to learn from all of this in doing your own beer pairings, is that you don't always have to fall back on the big, bold, strong beers like barley wines or strong ales to pair with food. Richness of stout is a perfect complement to chocolate or things that are chocolatey. So, you know, there are things here to pick up on. I decided to save the rest of the recording for the interview with Sean. So we moved on to the seventh course, Biramisu. Paxton's cute with the names too, isn't he? Biramisu. Lady Fingers, dipped in Goodfoot, which is the beer that they served it with, and Elijah Craig 18-year-old single-barrel bourbon, a malted raisin juice-infused mascarpone cream. This he paired with Firestone Walker's Goodfoot. Now, I'm not a fan of tiramisu, but I'm a fan of this. I mean, the bourbon had a really heavy bite, very sharp, but in conjunction with the mascarpone cream, you balanced it out. So you had to eat them both at the same time, and it had a nice balance. And Goodfoot was another beast, 12.5% American strong ale, a lot sweeter than the actual dessert, to be quite honest. If that was Sean's intention, it worked in his favor. Bourbon on the lady finger, bourbon definitely present in the beer. You can smell bourbon in Goodfoot, and you can taste the bourbon too. Of all the beers that we tasted at Deconstructed LA, this is probably the one that I would want to go back to the well on more than any other beer. I don't normally drink beers like this, but I'd go out of my way to drink this again. So Sean is finishing up the night, and I don't know if it's out of pure decadence, or maybe the man has some kind of a mean streak, but salty and sweet, his final pairing, that was the work of the devil. Sean cures his own bacon in beer, cuts it thick like ham, cooks it, and then coats it in dark chocolate, and then tops that with Heaven Hill bourbon barrel smoked hazelnuts and cocoa nibs, and then makes a parabola chocolate mousse mixed with a few Heaven Hill soaked sour cherries. Parabola, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That was the beer that we had with it. As we closed, Sean, it's unbelievable. This Parabola was followed by the 15th anniversary ale. And you know me, you know, I'm a sucker for bacon in all shapes, all sizes, all forms. But this dish was just outrageous. Coated in chocolate and hazelnuts. And that's decadence beyond decadence. It's sweet on the outside, salty bacon on the inside. It's the first time I'd ever had chocolate-covered bacon. It made me feel like the pig that I was eating. It's decadent, it's lush, something you feel guilty for eating. You feel guilty for enjoying it. You feel guilty for being in the position to be eating that in the first place. Now would not be the time to start thinking of hungry people all over the world. Now would not be the time to think of starving children in Africa. You got guilt rushing over you like a wave. And the beer, forget about it. My palate was completely polished. Parabola. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. P-A-R-A-B-O-L-A. You can pronounce it parabola? Parabola. Anyway, the vast majority of the beers that I had tasted, this was something I hadn't had before. A 12.5% Russian Imperial Stout. For years, I've been talking about Speedway Stout by Alesmith and Stone's Imperial Russian Stout that they release every year. It's a seasonal. And I always say that I would never love another beer of this style but this one. And then this thing comes along. You know, just like that chocolate-covered bacon that came with it, it made me feel like a cheater. You know, I loved it. Vanilla, coffee, stays with you for a long time. It's one of those beers I wish I could have sat with a longer period of time and enjoyed it. But I couldn't because the 15th anniversary beer was right behind it. And one characteristic that I picked up, and I wish I could have explored further, was tobacco. I think I picked up tobacco in the aroma of this beer. And I would think that something like that would be a fantastic way to spend some time with a Maduro-wrapped cigar. I would never think to pair a beer with a cigar, but I think I'd do it with this one. It's like a sweet cup of coffee. So leading up to this, meal's over, last beer's coming. It's a 15th anniversary ale, and I'm just not prepared. You know, just as I'd hoped it would be, you know, it wasn't carbonated a whole lot, and it actually tasted a lot less heavy than some of the beer we'd been having. And after what you've been through, you know, you're thinking to yourself, it's going to be a culmination of all these beers. But this is where that blending thing comes in. They know just how much to put in and just how heavy to make it. Very drinkable. Caramel came through. Molasses came through. Not heavy. Little coffee. Little nuts. It's a light roastiness to that. Played really nicely. The hops were there to kind of balance it out. You need that. It was not unlike a lot of the beers that we had that night. It was something I wish I just could have sat down with and enjoyed in peace and quiet. A lot of layers. I could go on for days about this. I think I'm starting to sound like one of those beer geeks that I really hate. I mean, I love beer, but I want to be real about it. But loud places, I can't get it. If you came to my house, you'd realize we live like a couple of monks in here. It's quiet. We don't like a lot of noise. So a beer like this, I want it to be quiet. I want to really know everything about it. And I would actually just sit down and I'd be to myself, but I was speechless. There's no real way to describe what you have when you're doing something like this. And then to put it into words, how deep the rabbit hole went that night, it was loud. I was getting drunk. I needed a quiet place to collect my thoughts, let it all sink in. I'd heard a lot of stories about Chef Paxton, about what he did in the kitchen. And he'd even explain to me the dishes that he was making. But this time, with this beer and the complexities that surrounded not only the beer, but the food. I mean, I needed a long breather. So there was no way I could describe it right then. And I realized I'm starting to feel a little light in the head. So before things got crazy, I grabbed Sean. I asked if we could talk about what he'd just done to everybody. There wasn't a person in that room that didn't look like they'd just been run down by the flavor train. And I wanted to get his 2 cents on the whole thing while I was still standing up. And again, forgive me for the sloppy speech here. 8 plus taster glasses of double-digit ABV beer. It's going to do it to you every time. When you're not used to drinking beer above 8%, you know, I'm a rookie. So here's the interview with Sean.
I can't even explain how
it sets the stage.
It respects the beer. You highlight yourself, and you highlight the beer. And I think that more than anything, if when you do both of those things at the same time, I
mean, it's a win-win.
I think that a lot of chefs don't do that.
No, I agree. And it's interesting because yeah, anybody could do a beer dinner. I mean, really. But to understand how to judge beer, what you might pair with beer, and what you probably don't want to pair with beer, as far as an understanding, as far as the pairing itself is critical. And you put cooked corn, for example, on something, or as a side dish, or this or that, You can get actually DMS flavors out of a beer that doesn't even have it. But
right.
You're raising the threshold by using certain ingredients that you probably don't want to do. And that's really where I struggle the most, is because not understanding or not having that knowledge as far as how to judge a beer and why this style is this style and that style is that style, and what that does as far as the whole pairing. Because when you really look at the whole dinner, you know, and the progression of flavors and palate fatigue, and you know, when you look at a wine pairing dinner,
right.
You know, usually it's a contrasting component. I do a lot more comparing to bring out the flavors in the beer, to highlight those flavors in the beer, and then to create that flavor profile that carries through the dish and then also carries through the whole meal. So it's different layers of the onion and everything else, and that's where the artistry, I guess. I mean, I'm still trying to put the vocabulary into it.
No, sure, and I understand that. At one point...
Tell me, Phil.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. At what point, because this kind of had me going through the entire thing. You knew what they were going to give you.
Uh-huh.
Right? You knew the beers they were going to give you. At what point...
But also, I mean, they're big beers.
No, they were big beers.
Yeah.
And at one point, I think we were so deep into the meal that there was this lag at one point. We went in back into the bar and had a pale ale. And it tasted like water.
Yeah.
Because we were so saturated.
And that's why I couldn't go back and forth. I mean, I couldn't go backwards. I mean,
no, certainly
I was committed. You know, and that's the other thing. So,
at what point in that, in tasting these beers, do you think I've got to go really big?
Well, it's not just going big. Because it's...
Because
it's,
you went big. You went chocolate-covered bacon.
Well, come on. And if anybody would love chocolate-covered bacon, Phil, that would be you. So,
I know, but chocolate-covered bacon is not going to go with everything.
And then smoking hazelnuts in bourbon barrel wood, you know, and then layering it with cocoa nibs. And, you know, I mean, that's what, to me, is fun.
Right.
You know, because it's rethinking how the beer has been aged or what it's been done or everything else. And that's, to me, where it's a whole nother layer. I mean, just to back up for a minute, I mean, to think about the space, to think about not only just the space, but then also, you know, there's this Moroccan kind of room with the colors and the open roof, and then to layer that in with, okay, we have a beer that's blended of 8 different beers, so how do you showcase that? And then how do you make that roadmap and that palate and sensory understanding of that beer? Because ultimately, my goal was is that people would have 15 and be like, wow, I understand this beer so much more, because not only of just the beers that I've paired and just the beers themselves, but the pairing would really highlight that nuances of those flavors in those beers that a lot of people overlook.
What's your relationship with Firestone Walker?
Oh, that's... I'm not going to talk about that.
No, I'm not talking about your political relationship. Like, you've had relationship problems.
No,
I'm saying,
no. It's
how deep does it go?
I'm just making a joke. And that's what's great. I mean, I think Firestone is not only a wonderful brewery to work with, but also their beers are so food-friendly. You know, I know Matt's a big foodie, and so I can't help but think when he crafts some of these beers and these delights that we enjoy drinking, that those beers showcase food so eloquently, you know, and even the heavily hopped beers are delicate. They're not like hit you over the head, and, you know, they're not aggressive. They're not so bitter that you can't swallow. I mean, you know, you start to think about all these different layers and what you can do and build upon. And that's where I think, you know,
you hit on a great thing here. Not a single one of their beers makes you pucker.
No. I mean, it's crafting.
There's a balance to everything that they do.
And that's what I think is amazing. So that's where, you know, I mean, it's a treat and a joy for me to work with them. And, you know, a lot of the other breweries I work with, too. I mean, it's fun to work with the brewer to understand the flavor profiles. I mean, you know, Matt and I are great friends. And, you know, it's nice to hang out with him all over the country. And he's followed me at a lot of dinners. And I followed him to a lot of different things. And, you know, it's a treat, too, where we get it and we can talk about flavor profiles. And, you know, I can ask him about a beer and, you know, he says, you know, chocolate-covered bacon, parabola. Okay, sure, I can do that.
What made you choose Los Angeles?
Well, it was LA Beer Week. We wanted to do something different. We wanted to showcase what's possible with beer in a town that isn't as beer-centric. And we were hoping that this event would showcase not only Firestone, but also good beer and good food together. I mean, it's that simple, you know. I mean, we wanted something to be special for people.
this being a kind of an important event, their 15th anniversary, they chose a local vintner in Paso Robles to blend these eight beers together.
Yeah, there's five of them. They all get together, and I mean, they all have their different flavor profiles, and I think it's an amazing thing too, because to talk about a winemaker and how they blend versus a beer maker, it's very, very different, and we're still learning from each other. It's not black and white. It's not yin and yang. It's sharing of ideas and knowledge, and you know, the history is so much more rich, you know, on that side. And you know, it's neat too to look at, you know, I mean, I make wine so I can make better beer.
Sure.
And it's interesting to see blending, you know, and I have some friends who blend, and there's one guy, he did 300 blend or 300 wines into a blend, into one wine. I'm like, when is enough enough?
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, you know, he's won a lot of medals, and I mean, that's what's great, and just to pick his mind about how he thinks about things, and just to continually to look forward to what we can do and how we can do things better.
It's such a huge risk for a brewery that's been around for so long to do something like this, and to say this
is something that crazy. You know, right. I mean, there's not many people like Batman who could pull it off. So
that's a big deal.
So. No, it's great. And, I mean, that's where, too, again, I'm always impressed with the layers of these flavors of these beers. And you know, I feel like if I didn't do the food that I do, it would be a disservice to the beers.
I think what you did tonight did so much justice, not only to what Firestone Walker has accomplished and what they've produced, but to craft beer in general. I think that it...
Oh, yeah. I mean, to win, you know, mid-sized brewery of the year three times, I mean, that's not jump change, you know.
No.
And I mean, the amount of medals, you know, six at GABF, where some of those categories are, you know, heavily entered, and just to be up there on the stage, let alone silver and gold in the same category, overachiever. It's awesome. It's, you know, but that's where, you know, the love that Matt puts into his beers, it shows. And it allows me to, you know, showcase that even further, you know, because I don't want my food just to be like, oh, yeah, huh, okay, that worked good. You know, another hamburger.
Right.
You know, but, you know, I want something to be special. I want something to be unique. I want that scallop to be like, oh, my God, I've never had a scallop like that. And that's the scallop that is the baseline.
I think it's important for everybody to know that craft brewing is an art.
Oh, big time.
And that cooking is an art.
It is.
And that tonight, two artists worked in conjunction.
We painted.
You painted a masterpiece.
Well, thank you.
Seriously.
I mean, for 175 people, eight courses.
Not too bad. Not too shabby.
And reception, too. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
I mean, Los Angeles is a place for art. There's a lot of art here.
I mean, this venue, I thought, was amazing. I mean, just the way it all worked together.
Right.
And the fact that it all harmoniously came together, and this is where, too, it's not just forcing and it's not just crowbar make it work. I mean, it's the delicate balance and the flavorings and the techniques. And
we pay a lot more than $75 to see art here in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight we got to taste it, we got to see it, we got to smell it, we got to drink it.
And you got to have the first release of 15, which, you know, to me is an honor to do that, you know, and not just with Firestone, but, you know, just to have people understand, like, how good this could be.
Yeah. Tell me you'll do this again.
I'll be happy to. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, my relationship with Firestone's awesome, and I constantly am amazed at what we can pull off together. And, you know, this is where it's fun, too, because, you know, do eight-course dinner for 175 people, you know, it's not just...
Right.
Especially in 2 days in a kitchen I'm not familiar with staff I've never worked with before, and a venue I've never worked in, and all the other, you know, variables that, you know, I mean, yeah, I had to bring a lot of stuff down from Sonoma.
Yeah, I hear that.
But that's what's great, too, is that, you know, just logistics is its own little thing. And
I can't even imagine what you had to deal with.
I mean, just the shopping and the ordering alone is just a ton of work, and just the sourcing of the menu, you know, to think about. I mean, just to come up with the concept of the menu and then build from it from there, and the different layers of, okay, we have to do this, and now how do I follow this beer with that beer and this food and that food and all these different things, because, you know, last thing I want you to do is just like, oh, I mean,
sure,
huge beers.
Oh, and, sure. And, are you kidding me?
You know, I mean, I could have just blown it out of the water, and you just feel sick, and that's just a disservice, you
right.
know, I mean. People do throw up at the French Laundry, you know, because they just overeat, you know, and so even to have the right portions.
I thought they threw up when the check came.
Yeah, it is a hefty price, but, you know, I mean, I love Keller. I love what he does, and I'm constantly amazed at what he's done, and it's a great role model for me. And,
right.
You know, I mean, I think he says it the best, is that it's not about fame and fortune. It's really about creating a memory. I mean, it's not about my fame and fortune. It's really not. It's about what we can do as individuals to make beer more widely acceptable at restaurants. I mean, I hate it when I go to a restaurant and they have one beer style.
Right.
And they have all these wines. I mean, you know, a sommelier would be like...
That's the point, isn't
why
it?
Why would you have five crappy Chardonnays on your menu?
Why always wine pairing? Why not beer pairing?
Well, I don't think people understand it. I think that the bitter component is something that is foreign to a lot of people, and there's a lot of other things I think that could be done a lot better. And,
sure.
And we have a... I mean, it just goes to show how much further we have to go. And, you know, each thing I do, I feel like I flip a stone, and it's a rabbit hole, and it just keeps going. And
I think this helps.
It does, but it helps me. I mean, to be honest, I push myself to come up with flavor combinations that are wacky and wild, but, you know, you taste that beer, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's going to work great. So.
How long did it take you? How long did... Let me rephrase that. How long did this take you?
A lot of hours. I, to be honest, I don't even know where to begin. I mean,
because you don't know when to quit. I mean, little things like
and
powders.
What's hard is that, like, I have to pull it back. And I mean, everything we made from scratch. You know,
everything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in 2 days we made stock, we made powders, we made gels, we made mousses, we made, you know, infusions, we made, you know, took apart barrels to smoke.
You made a scallop that was cooked. Tastes like an uncooked scallop.
Yeah, but that's how it's the right temperature. It's the right amount of time. It's
brilliant.
Smoking it, you know, it's all these different layers. And then when you pair it with that beer, I mean, to me, that pairing was just ridiculous. But that's what's fun, is that, you know, I'm even, you know, finger limes. I mean, who's used a finger lime before? I mean,
sure.
I saw it on an order sheet, and I did some research on it, and I'm like, yeah, I want that. And then I tried it, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to look perfect. And then, boom, here we go, and there it is. So... But it's great, and, you know, I appreciate you coming, Phil. And,
oh, thank you,
know,
you,
I'm
man.
A huge fan of your show and what you do, and, you know, it's great.
I'm a huge fan of your show. When are you going to be on again?
Soon. We're it's just with schedules and GBF and all these crazy events, and,
right.
And we're going to be doing it very soon. Going to add in some new twists, and awesome. So. But thank you, Phil.
Sean, thanks, man. This, seriously, this is one for the ages.
Well, you have to come to another dinner.
Well, you know, seriously, the fact that you guys are doing this in Los Angeles, it means everything to me because it means you're getting closer to Orange County. All right?
Hey, man, I love the breweries. So.
All right, then.
Awesome.
The brewery might be next.
There we go.
All right, then. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
So listen, before I wrap this up, let me tell you this. Let me tell you something about Paxton. The guy is a big teddy bear. He's a hugger. He loves life. He loves food. He loves beer. He loves what he does. He does not do this for the money. He doesn't do it for fame or fortune, just like you said. He does this for love. He really does love what he does. He's not like a lot of chefs. He works very hard, but he does not lose it in the kitchen. He wants people to work for him. When we were in the kitchen preparing for the interview, servers and other staff were saying, "It was a pleasure to work with you, chef." I mean, that's great to hear. For me, it was great to hear because I know how much work he puts into this. And how much he appreciates hearing that. Paxton is not Gordon Ramsay. He's not a screamer. He's not into those antics. He once told me that when a chef is pointing his finger at somebody in his kitchen, check it out, he's pointing a few at himself. And he should be, because if someone's not performing up to his standards, it's obvious that he, the chef, didn't do his job. A chef's job is to lead, to teach, to make sure his staff knows what they need to do. And if they fail, that means he failed. And I think that is why Chef Paxton's successful. That's why people want him doing their beer dinners. He's done a ton for very, very big events. GABF, World Beer Cup, big players like Allagash, Russian River Brewing, Brewers Association, Firestone Walker. When you need the best possible experience to come from your beer being paired with food, you're not going to leave it to chance with somebody who's going to half-ass it. Chicken soft tacos. Mac and cheese, sliders, pizza, chicken wings. Save all that shit for Monday Night Football. Because when it's time to respect beer, to give the beer the respect that it deserves, no chef working today is going to do it like Sean Z. Paxton. And I was thinking about it. after seeing how respectful he was to the beer and to the food, I think the Z might stand for zealot. Right? You can listen to Sean on the Brewing Network. His show, The Homebrewed Chef, isn't something you want to listen to on an empty stomach, so don't say I didn't warn you. Check it out at thebrewingnetwork.com. Jason Crossley's fantastic. He's done so much for podcasting in general, broadcasting, but most of all for craft beer. I wouldn't know about Russian River Brewing Company if it wasn't for Justin. And by the way, you're welcome for turning you on to Sean. You're going to love it. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Firestone Walker, Chef Paxton, and my brothers from Other Mothers for an incredible night. Music in this episode from Jose Padilla and Christy Keach. If you like this song, support the band. Purchase the song from Amazon.com or the iTunes Store. Check out links on the website, mylifeasafoodie.com. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Cheers.